This wind system will keep pushing colder air across the Midwest. Our Sprint Snipper of the Week, just 24.
I don't like his face.
I like him. He's handsome.
My job's very easy. 2 hours a day, basically reading prompts.
Hey, weatherman!
Every couple months, someone throws something at me. I receive a large reward for pretty much zero effort and contribution. The shakes and stuff are a reaction to that, I think.
Why would someone throw a shake at you? You just read the weather.
How's Shelly?
She's doing great.
It's fruitless for Shelly to be dancing. She should find another interest that would be more rewarding to her.
We've talked about that.
Well, you should do something, son.
My father's Robert King's Bristol. He was a great writer and a great dad.
You always worry about your kids, no matter how old. There's always looking after.
Noreen!
Ow! What are you doing?
I was just... You turned into it.
I encouraged Shelly to explore some other activities and interests. She picked archery.
Ow! Don't forget the tartar sauce.
Tartar sauce. Tartar sauce. Tartar sauce. Tartar sauce.
Anything else?
No.
Where is the tartar sauce?
I thought you were trying to improve matters.
I am. Give me time to get it together. I can get it together.
Well, that's great.
Do you know that the harder thing to do and the right thing to do are usually the same thing?
Let's go, Team Sprints!
Easy doesn't enter into grown-up life. To get anything of value, you have to sacrifice.
There's a lesson here. Let's finish.
People don't throw things at me anymore. Maybe because I carry a bow around.
Hey, hello, weatherman.
It's not easy. But easy doesn't enter into grown-up life.
Okay, let it go. Awesome.
She smiles and says she's in love with him. Can't find the weatherman!
Hello, and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike Tricrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Doing well. I'm impressed at how committed you stuck with the can't find a weatherman joke.
I'm not lying when I said every time I've seen the title for this movie, that song just plays in my head, like at random. Every time I think about the movie, I'm like, can't find the weatherman. And that's a problem that only I have. So there's that as well. It's a very unique situation that I find myself in. Mike, today we are discussing The Weatherman. And it seems that 2005 was the year of Nicolas Cage starring in dark comedies, primarily driven by his own narration. Coming right off of Andrew Niccol's Lord of War, just 1 month later, the world would see Nicolas Cage's starring role in Gore Verbinski's The Weatherman. And by the world would see, I mean not that much of the world would see. The movie only made about $19 million worldwide at the box office, although that was against a budget of $22 million, so it wasn't like a huge loss. It was just not a ton of people went out to go see this movie. If you watch the trailer for this movie, I think it's a really weird movie to market. You know, I think it's a very difficult movie to find. There is an audience for this, like the kind of like dark comedic sensibilities. But if you watch the trailer, it's very much portrayed as like a straight drama or a straight comedy. And it's not really sure I'm not really sure what it's trying to sell the movie as. And so I think that turned some people off of The Weatherman. I think the people who were sold on that trailer were upset by the actual movie that that they were given. Now, Gore Verbinski is a director who I have always felt gets sort of a raw deal from people. I don't know. He's one of the most like visually dynamic and like visceral directors working today, I think. But he has a penchant for bloated, nonsensical blockbusters. That has kind of kept him from being an A-tier name. Maybe people expected more from him after the 1-2 punch of The Ring and the original Pirates of the Caribbean. Like those came out right after, like Pirates came out right after The Ring. And so I think people had some high expectations for Verbinski. And if more people had seen The Weatherman, I think we would have gotten a bigger breakout for Verbinski after that. So, because The Weatherman is kind of Verbinski's attempt to make something much smaller in between massive projects. He had just come off of the original Pirates of the Caribbean, produced, by the way, by frequent Nicolas Cage collaborator Jerry Bruckheimer. Throw that name in there.
Nice.
And he was preparing a massive back-to-back shoot of Pirates 2 and 3. That production was insane. That was like almost a whole year of filming for those two movies, and they were released like a year apart. There was a lot of stuff going on for Pirates 2 and 3. And, you know, hanging out with Johnny Depp for that long is enough to drive anybody insane.
Yeah, you can't really blame Verbinski.
He's just like looking around, and there's so many hats on the table, and he's like, I can't take this anymore. So it's no wonder he took a little time off to scale back a bit. And The Weatherman is actually the smallest budgeted movie Verbinski has ever worked on, Mike.
Wow. Is it also his shortest runtime?
I believe it is.
Is it really?
There's a good chance it is. I think the only one that would come close is Mouse Hunt, which was his first movie. Which, by the way, the fact that Gore Verbinski directed Mouse Hunt is the best.
Mind-blowing. That changes everything I ever thought about that movie. And I have had thoughts about that movie.
I think about that movie every night before I go to bed.
Yeah. Can't find a mouse hunt. No, it doesn't work. I tried.
You gave it a shot. Yeah, Weatherman clocks in at, I think, an hour 41 minutes. And I don't have the runtime on hand for Mouse Hunt, but I can't be much more than that, right?
No, I don't think so. Just every other one of his movies is at least 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah, at least. yeah, so this movie stars Nicolas Cage as David Spritz, who is a weatherman for a local news station based in Chicago, and it finds him at a crossroads in his life. He's looking for his purpose, he's disconnected from his family, his father is dying, and there's a chance he may get a major job in New York, which would force him to move. His father is played by Michael Caine, the father's name is Robert Spritzel, and Hope Davis plays Noreen, Cage's wife. And if she seems familiar, Mike, it may be because she was in Kiss of Death, in a very small role, as Nicolas Cage's girlfriend in that movie. So we can absolutely assume these two movies take place in the same universe.
Confirmed.
I don't remember if Cage's character dies at the end of Kiss of Death. He probably does.
That's okay, though.
But obviously his death was faked. He and his girlfriend got together. He became a weatherman when he went to the witness protection program for criminals.
Yep.
And... and became such a high-powered weatherman that, you know, he got too big for his job and his family and, you know, went into this whole midlife crisis thing. And that's where The Weatherman takes place, approximately 15 years after Kiss of Death. 20 years after Kiss of Death. No, 10. 10 years after Kiss of Death.
I'm so impressed.
Man, math is hard. Yeah.
Yes.
And Hope Davis was also a cast member on shows like Wayward Pines and American Crime and was recently featured as Tony Stark's mother in Captain America Civil War.
Ooh.
Yeah, so there's that. And elsewhere, a really, really young Nicholas Holt is in this movie playing Cage's son, Mike. This was a few years before his breakthrough role on the British show Skins and way before I ever took notice of him as Beast in the X-Men movies.
Right.
And of course, way before Nux in Mad Max Fury Road, his best role by a mile, by 110% his best role. And Cage's daughter is played by child actress Jemaine de la Pena? I messed that up. But Jemaine de la Pena, who also appeared in Aaron Brockovich. And Michael Rispoli from The Sopranos plays Russ, Noreen's new boyfriend, which also makes this a Snake Eyes reunion, in addition to a Kiss of Death reunion, and possibly also a Leaving Las Vegas reunion. We talked about this in our Snake Eyes review. Michael Rispoli's Wikipedia says that he was in Leaving Las Vegas. His IMDb does not mention it at all. So
we'll never know.
And Leaving Las Vegas has a lot of bit parts of, like, just random people showing up. So it's really tough. Like, I don't remember Michael Rispoli being in the movie, but it's possible he was. So
yeah.
We'll never find out is basically what'll happen. But it's definitely a Snake Eyes reunion. That, I can tell you that. And Gil Bellows plays Mike's counselor, Dan Bowden. He was also featured in The Shawshank Redemption and Ally McBeal. And the real-life weatherman of WGN Chicago, Tom Skilling, appears in a cameo role as the WGN assistant director. So there's that. There's some authenticity to this project, Mike.
Very interesting.
Which is pretty cool. And this movie also features cameos from Bryant Gumbel, Ed McMahon, Christina Ferrer, and Wolfgang Puck, which is weird. I remember in the beginning of the movie, you see, like, Bryant Gumbel talking, like, saying who they got in the show. And it's like, oh, we've got – we had, like – it was somebody. It was like a bunch. It was like Elton John, Al Franken, and Wolfgang Puck. It's like, that's a packed show. That's a huge show for a one day of a morning show. That's insane.
Things escalated very quickly.
Oh, 100%. So The Weatherman was written by Stephen Conrad, who would go on to write films like The Pursuit of Happiness and The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. And the film features a score by frequent Gore Verbinski collaborator Hans Zimmer. And of course, It was directed by Gore Verbinski 2 years after Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, 1 year before Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Most recently, Verbinski directed 2017's A Cure for Wellness, which I talked about on Film Bookcast because I enjoyed it quite a bit. I am not afraid to admit that I really
dug. What a twist.
I dug A Cure for Wellness because it's totally bonkers. It runs way too long, as most Verbinski movies do, but you will never look at eels the same way again.
I don't think I look at them in a good way at all already. I don't know.
Get ready to think they're way worse.
Great. Okay.
For Wellness. I do think you should watch it, though. It's pretty good. And the IMDb plot synopsis for The Weatherman reads, a Chicago weatherman separated from his wife and children debates whether professional and personal success are mutually exclusive. And that is a pretty accurate plot synopsis for The Weatherman, actually. There's not a ton of like actual story going on here. It's just kind of a slice of life, comedic drama, black comedy, I will tell my thoughts on in a second. But Mike, why don't you start? What are your overall thoughts on The Weatherman?
So The Weatherman, it's interesting that you bring up the trailer and how it it portrayed it as a straight comedy or a straight drama, depending on which one, I guess, or it didn't really know what the tone of this movie was. Because there's only one thing that I remember about this movie from when it came out. I haven't seen it before this. But I just remember, for some reason, this poster and or box art of this movie are, like, burned into my brain.
Really?
And I think it's from years of working at FYE at a movie store, where it's just Cage with a chocolate shake on his shoulder, on one shoulder, and a bow and arrow on the other one.
Yep.
And that's all I knew going into this movie, and it delivered on both of those things.
4 stars!
Yeah. Read my Netflix review will be at the end, but that said, I just wanted to bring that up for some reason. It's weird the things that stick out to you when sure. You know, stuff for about things you've never seen before.
Yeah,
like we talked about the dollar bill or water bottle magnifying glass in National Treasure.
Yeah,
but I actually had a really good time with Weatherman. I don't know a whole lot about Verbinski's filmography. You talked about it. I have only probably, well, I guess I've seen Mouse Hunt and the Pirates movies. I haven't seen Cure for Wellness or The Ring.
You've never seen The Ring? Oh, shit.
No, I haven't. Yeah. So I didn't really know what to expect going into this, having only basically seen the Pirates movies then having a recollection of them.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised by this, as you called it, a slice of life drama. It's just the story of Dave Spritz trying to figure out what he's doing with his life. That's it. And it was surprisingly devastating at times and also really hilarious at the next scene. So it's hour and a half or 40 minutes or whatever it is just the right amount of time, which is nice for these kinds of movies. We've had some experience with some movies where in this podcast where they just maybe end 20 minutes too late, and it would have been perfect if they had just ended.
Right, yes. Something like City of Angels, right, you're talking about, where it's like, it's like a two-hour movie, and the last 20 minutes are like, what is even happening? Why is this still going on? Yeah.
That's even the point.
Exactly, yeah. I also really enjoyed The Weatherman. This was one of only two Verbinski movies that I had not seen. The other one is The Mexican from 2001. Which stars Brad Pitt, and that's also like 140 minutes, so that's a really long movie. I gotta say, I think this is among his best work alongside The Ring, the original Pirates. Have you seen Rango? Because he did Rango.
Oh, okay, I have seen Rango. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Rango is really good. I think Rango is probably the closest to this movie tonally that I've seen of his.
Yes.
I mean, in terms of the sense of humor that it has going for it. And Rango's obviously a kid's movie, and this is decidedly not. But I actually kind of related to a lot of what goes on in this movie. Not to toot my own horn, but as someone who is kind of a local celebrity.
Someone who's a really good weatherman, this movie really spoke to me.
No, but obviously, like, I'm on the radio, and sometimes people will recognize me on the street and stuff, and it's like, weird. There are elements of what Cage's character goes through that kind of ring true. Nobody has thrown anything at me yet.
Yet.
Yeah.
Hey!
But, you know, there is, like, that kind of expectation that people have where, like, as soon as, like, they see you, you're like, hey, you're the guy on the radio. And it's like, yeah, hi.
I gotta go.
Yeah, I'm trying to be, like, a person. And
Yeah, I'm online at the DMV, which is great.
And yeah, I have seen a lot of people saying that the movie is pretty sad and depressing. Like, I was going through the Netflix reviews, a lot of hatred towards this movie in the Netflix reviews.
Weird.
Because I think it's not the movie that people were sold. Right. In the trailers and stuff like that. A lot of people were saying this movie is pretty sad and depressing, and I think there are elements of that, but I just really found the movie like pretty funny and charming for the most part, and ultimately kind of cathartic by the end. Like, there's catharsis happening in the way that Cage kind of has his breakthroughs. Sort of, not even like breakthroughs, but more like mini breakthroughs almost. Like, he's...
It's more of just an acceptance, which is like even more real than anything else. I don't, just kind of like, yeah, this is my place in life, and I'm okay with that. And like, that's the message of the movie, and it's kind of really heartfelt and earnest.
Yeah, it's a crazy juxtaposition between that and some of the like absurdist humor of this movie, because there's a lot of like weird jokes and like really dark jokes, and like there's odd subplots and like really intense subplots that maybe don't need to be there. There's so much stuff happening in this movie, and to have that kind of it building towards that, just like Cage accepting his lot in life, like it's kind of nice. I really like that about this movie. And like we mentioned before, unlike most Verbinski movies, this one's pretty short. It's just over 90 minutes, where most of his stuff tends to clock in at 2.5 hours or more. Pirates of the Caribbean 3 is like about 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I will say it shouldn't be 3 hours, but that movie's a masterpiece.
I'm glad you cleared that up, Mike.
I am a pretty staunch defender of Verbinski's Pirates sequels. I think they are insane. And Pirates of the Caribbean 3 particularly. I think we've talked about it on a film podcast before, actually.
I'm sure we have.
I actually wrote an article about that on crookedscoreboard.com, about the Pirates sequels, which you can check out there. But it is also a much vulgar movie than I expected it to be. We were talking about that, with a lot of the movie centering on a 12-year-old girl's camel toe. That's just like kind of the sleaziest joke you can do in this kind of thing, and it's like a major plot point during the
for
movie.
A while. Yeah,
there's even like a montage of camel toes that accompany.
Yeah,
the first discussion of it. Plus, there's a subplot which sees Nicholas Holt's character having to deal with a sexual predator, and it's like the ickiest thing. I can't think of another word to describe it other than icky. It's just like, it's hard to watch at like, you don't even see that much of it. You see like, even like when that guy first shows up in his first scene, you're like, something's really off about this.
Something's odd. Yeah.
And then in the second scene, Nicholas Holt's having dinner at the guy's house, and he has a whole like pose for pictures with his shirt off, and it's like, and then like the next time you hear from Nicholas Holt, he like gets in a car crash because the guy tried to molest him, and it's like, oh
yeah,
fuck. Like, that escalated incredibly fast. But yeah, again, that also kind of leads into the catharsis at the end, though, with what Cage does towards the end. I think it's super satisfying. So I think it does ultimately work in the end. But for a while, I'm just like, I don't know why the movie is doing this. You know?
Yeah, especially because that plot line is so tangential to everything else. Because at least the daughter's camel toe plot line, Cage is involved in all those scenes, and like it's kind of about him dealing with that as a father that has no idea how to talk to his own daughter.
Right.
Whereas Nicholas Holt's this plot line with the counselor is divorced from everything else going on in the movie. Cage is never in any of those scenes,
right?
Except for picking him up at the mall in the first one. So if it feels real weird for a long time, which I guess is the point of that whole plot line.
Oh yeah, definitely. We'll talk about some of those scenes in a bit. I also wanted to give a shout out to Hans Zimmer's score, which I think is phenomenal in this movie, and also like weirdly similar to his score for Dunkirk. Did you think
I was going to bring that up?
There's a ticking motif in this movie, like almost like a ticking clock thing. It seems like a dry run for what he was doing in Dunkirk, which is kind of insane if you think about it. This is 12 years beforehand.
And just about a weatherman.
And it's just about a weatherman. It has nowhere near the intensity of Dunkirk. but I think it's kind of cool comparing the two scores and like seeing the movies that they're accompanying and seeing like how a similar score is used in different situations to do different things. I think it's kind of interesting in that regard.
It sounds like you have your next article at Crooked Scoreboard, Mike.
Sounds like I do. Ooh, shit. There it is. Also wanted to note this. Gore Verbinski also plays guitar on Hans Zimmer's score for this movie.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fucking neat. So... So there's that. So yeah, Mike, what did you think of Nicolas Cage in The Weatherman?
I think this is a tragically underrated performance from Cage. This should have been a movie that a lot of people saw, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah, it's Cage doing his neurotic best up there with what we've seen in adaptation, I think. It's a slight return to the weird voice for a little while, I think. I think it goes away by the end of the movie, or my ear just got used to it. But I think at the beginning, he's doing a weird, sort of half nasal, half Chicago thing, maybe. I'm not sure.
I didn't really pick up on any like weird voice, but it's definitely, maybe I'm just used to hearing weird voices from Cage that I'm like, that didn't even register for me. But
it's nothing outlandish like we saw in Valley Girl or something like that.
Or
but
Con
it is,
Air or
Con Air, yeah. But it just seemed like a weird accent he's putting on, a weird affectation, much like he did in Adaptation. And I think even Michael Caine does it too, a tiny little bit.
Michael Caine's definitely doing an American accent.
Trying to do one.
His British accent definitely comes through, and I don't think Michael Caine can speak and not sound like Michael Caine.
But I think Cage's character is so earnest and believable and real throughout this whole movie. It really, really helped ground all of this just normal things that he's going through that are just like absolutely, I said devastating earlier, and I think a lot of it is. It offers this catharsis by the end of it, but for a long time, and it does have this huge, like really absurdist humor sprinkled throughout. But for a long time, it's just a guy like trying to do his best, and just everything that he does is just wrong, and that is just hard. That hurts to watch.
It does
in a good way, in a way that if you can handle that kind of secondhand embarrassment stuff, or just a person being wrong.
Yes.
About things.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of like cringe comedy in this movie.
Yeah.
And that's something that not everybody is a fan of. Like cringe comedy is a big thing with like The Office and stuff like that, and people like I know people who like hate The Office because of like just watching it like makes them like upset. And I think this movie's kind of a similar vein. Like there's a scene where like Cage early on he's talking to his ex-wife and they're talking and she like turns away and he like can't think of another thing to say, so he just, like picks up some snow and throws a snowball at her, and it hits her like square in the face, and she's like so upset at him, and it's like, ugh.
He breaks her glasses and stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Cage is great in this movie. I think it's one of his better performances. He plays he plays sad sack and pathetic like so well, and it does feel like a variation of his performance in Adaptation. And it's crazy that he hasn't played this kind of role more often because he's so good at it. And I think a lot of the film is driven by Nicolas Cage's voiceover. In that sense, it's much more like Adaptation than it is Lord of War. I feel like the voiceover in this movie, it's more getting into Cage's head than it is exposition like it was in Lord of War. Like, I feel like in Lord of War, like, there was a lot more voiceover in Lord of War. There's a lot in this movie, but I feel like Lord of War was like every scene was punctuated by voiceover.
And if it wasn't, it just feels like it was.
Yeah, and in this movie, there's a lot of voiceover too, but it's kind of just to show you Cage's thought process and like how he's dealing with the things in his life. And so I feel like that works a lot better in terms of the voiceover in this movie. Now we've talked a little bit about his performance and Adaptation, but how do you think this role fits in with the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play so far, Mike?
I think Adaptation draws the closest similarity to it, and we talked about Lord of War too. I think it's interesting that these movies came out so close to each other, especially because this feels like the, I don't want to say polar opposite, because I feel like they're heading in the same direction, sort of, but Weatherman gets there in a real, actually gets there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like we mentioned in Lord of War, his character says that one quote of, you know, how do we arm the other 11 people in that life of a bullet opening credits. And at the end of the movie, he's the same as he was in the first 20 seconds as he is in the last 20 seconds.
Yes.
In Weatherman, we have a full arc of this person, of David Spritz. And I feel like they are these kind of just average people that are really good at what they do, just trying to get by. Kind of archetype characters, and Weatherman is so much more well written. David Spritz is a well rounded character. I believed him to be a real person. That's not just Nicolas Cage doing cool stuff,
right?
trying to be funny. So yeah, I think those are the the closest comparisons to draw to Lord of War and adaptation. And I think Weatherman succeeds much more than it did in Lord of War.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think this would actually make a great double feature with adaptation. Just watching these, watching those back to back, I think would be really good. I also wanted to note, this is the second in what I'm going to call Cage's The Something Man trilogy. The first being The Family Man, this one being The Weatherman, and the third, of course, The Wicker Man.
Wow.
So that's a thing that I'm coining right now. I don't think that exists at the moment. Matchstick Men could be its like a spinoff of the, because that's his men spinoff.
That's the prequel.
That's the prequel. but yeah, and actually, The Weatherman is actually kind of how I picture Nicolas Cage's character from The Family Man if he was unsuccessful winning Tay Leone back at the airport in the end. You know, I could see if The Family Man had ended the way it should have, where she writes him off as a crazy person, Nicolas Cage would have gone back to his high-paying job, but an aimless existence and an obsession of getting his family back, and that's exactly what this movie is. And so this is almost like the alternate ending to The Family Man that we never got to see, and so I think that's kind of cool.
It's his I can't remember what the name of that actual trilogy is. Before Sunset.
Before Sunrise, yeah. Sunset, and Midnight.
Yeah.
It might be. But yeah, so Mike, are there any moments or scenes in the Weatherman?
Wait, hold on. We need to spin this trilogy out to Wicker Man. Well, I guess we'll have to wait till we get there. But he accepts his lot in life and goes on to become a private detective or whatever he's doing in fucking Wicker Man. I don't remember.
And then he gets killed by bees or something. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That all tracks.
I didn't think about the actual stories of the entire trilogy. I just wanted to make the Something Man.
But it works, though.
It does work. You got to think about it for a second. Now, Mike, were there any moments or scenes in The Weatherman that really stood out to you?
There's one that I just have to highlight because it's the absurdist comedy streak throughout this movie. It's towards the beginning where Cage is giving us his voiceover, you know, like you said, which is much more stream of conscious. And he is kind of explaining just like why he thinks people hate him or why people throw things at him for the first time. We get this experience about how things are just easy. He just stands in front of a green screen and reads a prompt. And it's he's explaining his salary, which includes appearances. And it's him as Abraham Lincoln reading the Gettysburg Address, which is just hilarious in and of itself. And then the scene continues to show Cage dressed as Abraham Lincoln in line at the churro booth. And then picking up a girl at this fair or whatever that he's at. Yeah. And it's just him in bed as Abraham Lincoln with the beard half falling off.
Yes. And she is dressed as a German wench, by the way. You got to throw that in there as well.
Yeah. I can't forget that detail.
Yeah.
And it's just hilarious, like, out of nowhere, and it's the best.
Yes, I had that one written down as well, because that was just an insane sequence. But I did want to talk about the flashback sequence of Cage forgetting the tartar sauce and that being the last straw. That was probably my favorite sequence in the movie, because I loved, you know, that's the sequence where you see kind of Cage and his wife Noreen's relationship kind of falling apart, like, before the actual events of the movie. And it seems like that had already been happening for a long time. But there's this big family dinner thing. They're ordering takeout, and she's yelling at him, "Don't forget the tartar sauce." And he's like, "I'm not going to forget the tartar sauce." And she's like, "But you never listen to me." And it's this whole thing. And so you see his entire journey to the restaurant to get the food.
Don't forget the tartar sauce.
Call the order in, Noreen, and quit busting my you-know-what, okay?
You always have to listen to what I'm saying to you.
I heard you. Tartar sauce.
Tartar sauce. Man, I'd like to put my face in there. Right in there. Tartar sauce. My hips are cold. Tartar sauce. That's when you know it's cold. I like eating pussy. Tartar sauce. A lot of guys don't. Well, maybe they do. Maybe that's just black guys. Tartar sauce. What happened to the guy who was trying to go around the world in a balloon? Did he make it? I should put some espionage or stolen plutonium in my novel, Tartar Sauce. Spice it up. Neil Young. Fuck, it's cold. Neil Young. What? Why am I thinking about Neil Young? Neil Diamond. Neil. There's not a lot of famous Neils. Is this Wednesday? I wish I had two dicks. I thought the whole family was going to learn Spanish together this year. That never really happened. Haven't had a Spanish omelet in a long time. Here we go.
Anything else? No.
And you just, like, you hear his voice over in his head, and he just keeps saying things, like, random things, like, tartar sauce. Well, I gotta think of tartar sauce. And, like, sees a girl's butt, and he's like, man, I would like to put my face in that. And I just put my face all up in that. And then he just starts thinking about, like, Neil Young, and just, like, random thoughts that come out. And it kind of, like, perfectly encapsulates the, like, just being a person, like, randomly thinking, like, random things that come into your head as and you don't know why. Like, you suddenly start thinking about Neil Young. Like, that happens to me a lot. Like, I'll just, like, randomly thinking about, like, Marvel movies or something and just, like, think about it for, like, 10 straight minutes. And, like, that's...
You just can't find a weatherman.
I just can't find a weatherman. My... so, yeah, I love seeing, like, Cage's thought process there. I feel like it's, you know, shows a lot about his character from before the movie starts. And how he got to where he is now. So I thought that was pretty cool. And the payoff scene with Michael Caine towards the end, where he shows up and plays Bob Seger's Like a Rock with Cage, surprisingly, like, poignant and, like, oddly momentous. Yeah. Like, it's a really nice scene, which pays off the earlier scene where Michael Caine is dying from, I think, pancreatic cancer or something like that. He has lymphoma. He's dying, and there's a scene in the movie where they have, like, a living funeral for Michael Caine's character, and Cage is about to give his speech. And he says, when I think of my father, I think of Bob Seger's Like a Rock. And then the power goes out and he can't finish his speech.
Yep.
And so, you know, you kind of think nothing of it. Cage has, like, this, like, self-loathing monologue, like, a voiceover scene right afterwards. Where he's like, so there were 40 minutes passed. So my entire speech was something about Bob Seger as my dad is dying. And it's like this, like, really, like, depressing thing. And then, like, a few scenes later, Caine shows up in a car and starts playing Like a Rock, and he's just like, I don't get it. And he's trying to understand.
It's just what I do, David. I've practiced and I've gotten good. Like you in the weather business.
But I don't predict it. Nobody does, because it's just wind. It's wind. It blows all over the place. What the fuck? I have to go to work.
David. This shit life. We must chuck some things. We must chuck them. In this shit life. There's always looking after. You have time.
And I think that kind of, like, sums up their relationship really well throughout the movie, I think. Like, they don't have, like, a contentious relationship, but they have, like, a really straight... They have a really, like, stiff one, I guess you could say. Michael Caine doesn't really get what Cage's life is about, and Cage has spent his entire life trying to live up to his father's expectations, and he always feels like he's short on that. And so I think it is a really nice scene between the two of them. That's right before Michael Caine's death in the movie, and so it's just a really nice moment to end his character on.
Yeah, and that's another one of those the living funeral scene with the speech and the power goes out. Well, on the one hand, absolutely hilarious that's his speech, right? Like, that the power goes out. Of course it does.
Yeah.
But on the other, I mean, that's black comedy, right? At the same time, absolutely devastating and tragic. and I think Cage's performance, I keep saying earnest, because it just feels so real. So you totally believe the fact that would happen to this character. That scene, that payoff of Michael Caine kind of finally reaching out. Because they, like you said, they're not contentious by any means. They're distant, I guess. They're stiff is another good, like you said.
Yeah.
I did like that scene too. I did really like the scene, one of the more joyous moments we get when Cage takes his daughter dress shopping in New York, and they, like, get this, like, silly, goofy,
with the clothing montage.
Like, yeah, like, clothing model montage, and Cage is, like, fainting in the chair and, like, all this stuff.
Yes, it was very, like, 90s sitcom style.
Like,
what was happening there? But yeah, I did enjoy that montage too. It was very nice, and that's kind of where the camel toe stuff kind of comes to a head. in the movie. They really,
what a sentence.
I know. They really commit to the camel toe gag. They have a whole thing where Michael Caine is talking to Cage, and he's talking about how concerned he is for his daughter, and he's explaining to her that the kids call his daughter camel toe at school. And he explains to Cage what it is, and then the movie like explains what it is, and then it shows a montage of like pictures of camel toes. And then, you know, like later on, like Cage is in the city with his daughter, and he's having her try on stuff, and she like tries on a pair of jeans, and you see Cage's horrified reaction to her camel toe.
And we get flashed a frame of a literal camel toe.
It's like
subliminal messaging of a camel toe, like an actual camel toe.
That is pretty insane. And then so Cage like freaks out of the store, and then like insists that his daughter buy dresses instead. And that's like it ends up working out. It's where the montage kicks in, and she tries on all these like fashionable dresses and stuff. And it's nice. And it even like commits further a bit, where like later on they're walking through the park, and he's talking to her, and he's like, "Do kids ever like call you names at school?" And she's like, "I mean, sometimes." Like, what do you mean? And she's like, "Well, you know, like dummy or like camel toe." just in like the least subtle way possible. And she talks about it, and she's like, "Yeah, people do call me camel toe." And she's like, and he's like, "Do you know why they call you that?" And she's like, "Well, cause I'm tough like a camel toe."
Yeah.
And it's kind of this like nice moment.
It's so endearing. Like, in this absolutely twisted way, it's like the such a heartfelt moment.
It is pretty great. And then it keeps like when Cage gets the call that's Nicholas Holt his counselor tried to molest him. He freaks out at his wife, and he's like, "I'm in the city over here with freaking camel toe," like referring to his daughter. Like, he's calling her that. And it's like, holy shit. I gotta say, when I started this podcast, I didn't think we would say the words camel toe all that much.
Thanks Nicolas Cage
for that one. We should get off that. We should talk about the sex predator subplot.
Yeah.
Which just
fuck.
Yeah, man. That is so, like we talked about it before, it is so creepy when that dude first shows up. Like, you can tell there's something off about that relationship, like right away. Cage talks about how his son has just got out of rehab, I guess. Nicholas Holt's character. And so this guy is one of his counselors, and so they have kind of like a counselor student relationship, and they're at the store, and the guy like offers to buy Nicholas Holt this sweater, and then Cage picks him up from the mall, and that's the end of it. And then later on, you see Holt at dinner with the guy and taking shirtless pictures, and it's creepy, and it's very bad. And then the next scene you hear of it is when Cage answers the phone, and his wife calls and tells him that his son Mike has crashed somebody's car, his counselor's car, I think. Because they were going to a movie together, and the counselor tried to blow him in the car.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy shit, that escalated so fast. Like, like ridiculously fast. And Cage is like understandably furious about this whole thing. Cage comes back to Chicago, and he talks to his son. And then towards the end of the movie, Cage just beats the shit out of the counselor.
Yeah.
It is awesome. It's so damn cathartic. And it kind of like repairs the relationship between him and his son in a weird way too. and I feel like that's kind of what makes the subplot work, is that Cage isn't there for most of that. And they kind of establish he has kind of a distant relationship with the son. They haven't really spoken that much, in the same way that Cage had with Michael Caine. I think it is pretty great when Cage kind of just comes to the rescue at the end and just beats the shit out of the guy. And then Cage and his son kind of have that moment together in the food court.
With the awkward arm over the shoulders.
Yeah.
That's like just too far away to be not, like, it was perfect. It's exactly. So perfect.
It is pretty great. There is a recurring bit throughout the movie about fast food. People will throw things at Nicolas Cage, like because they recognize him from TV and they think he's like, they get like angry at him, or they just like hate his guts for no reason or whatever. One of my favorite things in the movie, actually, and I related to this too. It was early on, like you see Cage doing the weatherman bit, like he's doing the weather, and you cuts to this like older couple watching the weather on the TV, and the guy is like, "I don't like them. I don't like him. He's an asshole."
Yeah,
he's got an asshole face. And the woman's like, I like him. And I feel like I get that so much because, like, I work in radio. And I get,
do people tell you you have a face for radio, Mike?
Well, you get people who complain about you for no reason. It's just like,
oh,
well,
fair.
That's what I mean. Like, we do, like, you know, stuff on, like, live video and stuff on Facebook, so you get comments on stuff like that. And, like, about half of them are like, yeah, this is, like, really, like, good stuff, like, really positive stuff. And the rest of them are just, like, the most vitriolic shit.
That's amazing.
And, you know, it doesn't really bother me. Like, I kind of like reading it because I think it's pretty funny. But, like, it is the most, like, insane shit you'll find on, like, the comment section of a Facebook live video from a local radio station. It is, it is preposterous. And so I kind of got that with Gage's character as well. but like I said, nobody's thrown anything at me yet, so that's a plus.
So you got that going for you.
Which is nice. But yeah, there's the recurring bit where Cage, people are throwing stuff at Nicolas Cage, and they're always fast food items, right? It's always like a Wendy's Frosty or a Big Gulp from 7-Eleven or like, I think it was a McDonald's apple pie at one point, and there's like a whole, that's when he like starts, that's when he loses it. He gets hit with the apple pie and just loses it and runs after the guy and like throws the apple pie back in the car at the guy, which is pretty funny. I also really loved Michael Caine's bit where he has no idea what these American fast food items are. It's just, which I think kind of emphasizes the distance between him and Cage as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, just Michael Caine's like trying to like wrap his brain around, like, why would people throw things at you? I don't understand. And you know, somebody will throw a Frosty. He's like, what's a Frosty?
He's just Michael Caine in the best way.
Yeah. Like I wouldn't expect Michael Caine in real life to know what a Frosty is, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, and so early on in the movie, I kind of noted like there's a lot of fast food product placement happening.
There's a lot of that going on, yeah.
And I did not expect that to pay off at the end with Cage's revelation that what he does on TV is the equivalent of fast food.
The first time I was struck with something, a chicken breast from Kenny Rogers, I was standing next to a garbage pail. I thought it might have been an accident that they were throwing it out. The second time, it hit me square on the chin. A soft taco. Then, pop. A falafel. McNuggets. Always fast food. Fast food. Shit people would rather throw out than finish. It's easy. It tastes all right, but it doesn't really provide you any nourishment. I'm fast food.
Yeah, it's the well-written version of Lord of War, where the character goes through a thing and changes from it.
So yeah, I like that aspect of it quite a bit. And yeah, otherwise, I did. There was one other scene I wanted to mention, which was the trust exercises with Noreen.
which was
a really funny scene. It kind of tells you a lot about Cage's character and his relationship with Noreen. In that scene, you know, they're in this whole room of people, and there's one. Exercise towards the end where they're supposed to each write down something and hand it off to the other person, and the other person's not supposed to look at it. And before they even explain what the thing is, the first thing they say is like, okay, you have to explain something that you regret about your life with your partner. And Cage immediately just like shouts out, I had this thing with porno. And he's like explaining his thing with porno. It's like, no, just write it down and hand it to the partner. The partner's not going to look at it. And so when Noreen hands her thing to Cage, Cage immediately reads the note, like rushes off to read what she wrote. And her note reads that she'd not like his sci-fi novel that he wrote. Then, you know, he immediately like works that into conversation in the next scene. And so she gets pissed off at him and she reads his note. And his note is that her BJs lacked enthusiasm. Which was pretty great, and they're having this conversation in front of their 12-year-old daughter, which is even better. And it's just a very funny scene that tells you a lot about their relationship in the span of like a 2 minute in the span of like a 2 minute scene, which I think is pretty cool. But yeah, otherwise, Mike, is there anything else you wanted to mention or anything of note in this movie? Having a sack race in the ice seems like a bad idea. Just throwing that.
Yeah, that was such a great. I mean, I guess the snowball hitting his wife or ex-wife in the face is like the first example of just how everything goes wrong for him.
Right.
And I did love that, the escalation of that sack race on ice scene where they fall and the daughter's like, oh, my leg hurts. And he's like, no, it's a lesson. We got to finish. Come on. And they get up and he like kind of drags her across the finish line. And then we cut to her getting out of a cab with crutches and she's got a torn ACL. it's such a great just moment of comedy.
Yes.
That I would like to highlight.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Also of note, I really loved when Cage comes back after the New York trip, and he sees Russ, and he's talking. There's like this voiceover thing. He's like, I can't explain why I did what I did next. And you see Cage like slowly taking off his glove, and he just slaps Russ in the face with his glove. And he makes a point. It's like, what am I, like Zorro? Like, what is? That was pretty great as well. And there is the ending of the movie, which, you know, Cage does get the dream job in New York City. He gets the national job on Bryant Gumbel's show. And the thing about this, like halfway through the movie, he has a fantasy where he's marching the Thanksgiving Day parade. He's on the float with the morning show and his entire family is there with him. And Ed McMahon is talking about how his life has turned around and how it's so great. And the movie does end with Cage in the Thanksgiving Day parade, but without his family with him. And I think that's kind of really interesting. We talked about how the movie kind of builds to Cage's acceptance of his life and acceptance of his place within his family. And the movie kind of builds him to a point where like he does have a good relationship with his kids. Even if he is moving away and won't be with them as much, he does have that relationship with them. And it's much more solid than it was at the beginning of the movie. But he can't live with them full time. His wife has them. And so there's that.
Yeah.
But I really love the final lines of this movie where he's just talking about, you know, his place in the world. And he's like, my place is behind Fire Brigade 47, but in front of SpongeBob. Hello, America.
It's perfect. Yeah.
It's the perfect note to end this movie on. So that was pretty great as well. But yeah, anything else, Mike, before we get into Netflix reviews?
No, I'm interested to see what the people had to say. And I will just say, I really hope our good old friend, who we haven't heard from in a while, comes in to complain about the vulgarity of this movie.
All right, let's get into some Netflix reviews. Here's a 1-star review of The Weatherman. God damn it, Mike.
I can't even do it. So just to explain, I don't see these at all. Yeah. Mike picks all of them, so I have no idea what's coming.
Well, you fucking nailed it on the first one. That's...
That's
pretty great. Okay, here's a 1-star review of The Weatherman. This might have been a watchable movie if it weren't for the constant filthy language coming out of their mouths. I mean, the Weatherman and Popo are talking about his poor daughter's private parts, talking filth in front of the kids, and the movie makers even had to have the young girls talking filth. How sad and disgusting. What is that about? What is the purpose of it? It's an insult to people's intelligence. Beyond that, poor old Nick simply can't act anyway, and this is one of his worst moments. He looks stupefied or half asleep most of the time. Michael Caine is a good actor, and he should have turned this one down. In the end, the kids are suddenly very well-adjusted, happy children, seemingly because of one shopping trip and Nick's one act of courage with that awful pedophile. Well, wouldn't it be grand if raising kids was that easy? Oh, wow. And comedy, not. Sorry to be so down in this movie, but it's just that bad. I love how it ends, oh, and comedy, not, which is a joke that hasn't been popular since 1992 with Wayne's World.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, here's another 1-star review of The Weatherman. This movie should be reserved exclusively for prisoners in solitary confinement.
Wow.
It has zero redeeming qualities, even the setting. Take something that looks beautiful and they film it in February when Chicago looks like crap. Michael Caine appears to be in a mortified state of shock throughout the movie, thinking to himself, I'm Michael effing Caine. Why am I in this piece of crap movie? He can't fake an American accent either. It's painful just watching him speak. Cage's character is a grade A D-bag from beginning to end, acknowledging at the end of the movie, and that's how he is and has no motivation to change. The movie gives you glimmers of hope that he's going to change, and then he doesn't. I think the movie hit its low point when Michael Caine has to explain to his D-bag son that the granddaughter is being called a camel toe at school. and then has to explain to him what that means. God awful. No human being should ever voluntarily watch this POS. This film has no redeeming qualities. Stay away. Find some other way to spend 2 hours. Anything will be better than sitting through this epic failure. There's a lot of vitriol towards the Weatherman. Even in its 5-star reviews, Mike, which we'll talk about right now. Here's a 5-star review of the Weatherman. Boring, insipid, vain garbage. This is the 5-star.
Interesting. That's it? That's the whole
thing. Well, no, there's more. I'm just emphasizing this. Oh. I'm pretty sure this guy clicked the wrong button.
Mm-hmm, probably.
This is literally a movie you can only possibly relate to if you happen to either be A, an actual weatherman, or B, Nicolas Cage. Everyone else that watches this will just wonder why the heck it was made. Even the scenes with Michael Caine were creepy, sad, and uncomfortable, and meaningless. He just seems really depressed to be forced to act across from Nicolas Cage, which is understandable. Caine is only in this for 5 minutes. Then it goes back to the 2-hour suckathon with Nick Cage frantically doing nothing. The Weatherman.
That's actually... Oh, sorry.
What were you going to say?
Frantically doing nothing is actually a really good description for this character.
Kind of is, actually. Point to that. The Weatherman, all the personal enrichment and thrilling entertainment value of watching a real life Weatherman.
What a slam on Weatherman.
Yeah, take that. And there's even more. 10 points for realism, I guess. 0 points for everything else you can measure with points. yeah, that's a harsh review, man. A harsh review if you're 5 stars.
Five star.
But now let's see if we can get something a little more positive with a 1-star review of The Weatherman. This movie wasted my time. It was one of the worst movies ever created. This is not a dark comedy. It has no humor. Nothing was resolved. No change in any characters. This movie was so terrible, the rating system should have a spot for no stars. After watching this movie, I became physically ill due to the horrible lack of plots, the lack of character development, and the despair of the knowledge others may have the torture of viewing this pile of Mr. Cage. I have nothing good to say for this waste of time. I read the reviews. How in the no universe has anybody given this more than 1 star is beyond my comprehension. For the love of humanity, do not watch this quote-unquote movie. I wish I had never seen or heard of this film, let alone watched it. This film was the work of Satan's retarded brother Sam.
Jesus Christ. What a dark turn that review took.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some, again, some really intense hatred towards the Weatherman on Netflix, which is pretty intense.
Kind of apropos of the plot.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. These are the people who would be throwing shakes and stuff at Nicolas Cage and the Weatherman. Yeah. Here's a 5-star review of the Weatherman. So this is one that's a little more positive. There are so many people who are on here writing crappy reviews of this gem. At first, I could not understand what was going on. Then, I realized the pattern that was forming from review to review. Everyone was disappointed that it was labeled a comedy, and no one seemed to be laughing. This movie is hilarious and heartfelt. For all of you out there with no sense of humor or sense for that matter, I think the Flintstones are on here somewhere. You don't know what the hell you were talking about. Go pay $10 and review the next Twilight installment. So he liked it. So there's that. But also,
that's nice.
Yeah. But also, everyone who doesn't like it should be forced to watch Flintstones and Twilight for the rest of their days, is what he's saying.
That seems a bit excessive, but also one of the other people also advocated for this being torture. So, it balances out, I guess.
So there is that. Here's a 2-star review of The Weatherman. The special features are more interesting than the movie. I've hired 3 XTV weathermen, and none ever told me they had things thrown at them. Apparently, this was a writer's invention to add conflict to the storyline. I hope some disgruntled moviegoers don't take it as a social norm and follow suit. Most public personalities will vow that if your vocabulary is filled with vulgarity, you'll inevitably spout some nasty words while on the air. The gutter dialogue was overwhelming and showed the writer's lack of imagination in describing anger. A very cheap shot. The tour of the weather broadcast studio and the special features was interesting and educational. That's why I gave it 2 stars.
That's amazing.
I love that, A, because, you know, I'm glad that he got something out of the tour of the weather studio. Yeah. B, why would you watch the special features to a movie you don't like? I don't understand that.
That seems real weird. You're right.
I don't understand that mindset at all. But anyway, I got one last one. Here's a 1-star review of The Weatherman. there's about 2.5 hours of my life I can't get back. This movie was just so boring. I love Nicolas Cage. The movie was not right for him. I feel bad just putting 1 star. What I like about that review is that he says it's 2.5 hours of his life he can't get back, when the movie is about 1.5 hours. So,
yeah.
So he hated this movie so much that it actually took an hour off of his life.
This person apparently watched this movie in the Twilight Zone and just lost an hour somewhere in the shuffle.
Yeah, maybe he was crossing over international date lines or something while he was watching the movie. It's like, well, there's 2.5 hours gone. Anyway, so yeah, that about wraps up for The Weatherman. Despite all the negative Netflix reviews, I really enjoyed it. Mike, it sounds like you really enjoyed it as well. I think it's one of Verbinski's best, so I definitely recommend checking this one out. And that about wraps it up. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. If you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79. And I think now we have to do a Complete Works After Dark where we talk about Mouse Hunt.
Yeah, a bonus episode of Mouse Hunt is definitely, maybe, definitely not in the works.
Nope, not even a little bit.
I would love to, but I'm already tired as it is. Yeah. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, all of my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. And I got work at Crooked Marquee now, actually. Crooked Marquee is now the spinoff of Crooked Scoreboard. They took all the movie stuff from Crooked Scoreboard and made it its own website. So now it's crookedmarquee.com. So you can find all my work there. I have an article going up about 310 to Yuma coming out in just a couple days to celebrate its 10th anniversary. So pretty excited about that one. And thank you guys for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCrease Show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review, help support this podcast and Film Book by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. You can list the podcast in the title of your email that you're talking about, because we have so many different ones to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks, because Mike, do you know what movie we're talking about next?
I have a feeling. Is it related to the Something Man?
It's not The Wicker Man yet. We're not quite there. We're getting very close to The Wicker Man.
Yeah, I don't know what's next, though.
We are talking Nicolas Cage's return to animation with 2006's The Ant Bully.
Oh, my God. Wait, what was the first one? The Christmas Carol?
Yeah, Christmas Carol the movie.
All right, I forgot. Okay.
Yeah, so The Ant Bully is the next movie we'll be talking about. I have not seen it.
Nope.
I don't expect much from it, although it has a 63 on Rotten Tomatoes, so it might end up being okay. I remember seeing trailers for it when I was a kid, and I was probably 13 when that movie came out. So I might have been too old for whatever the Ant Bully was putting down. And you know, what is there left to be said after A Bug's Life and Ants have already covered all the territory?
I can't imagine that there's more left to be said after Woody Allen has talked about a thing. So.
Right, because he talks nonstop, so he pretty much covers all the points.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So we will be talking about The Ant Bully next, though, and I am curious to see how that turns out. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast. We are talking Twin Peaks, baby, in the next episode. The series finale of Twin Peaks is this Sunday, and we'll be talking about it next week, the entire season. Very excited. And we'll also throw in some Game of Thrones discussion for listeners who don't watch Twin Peaks as well, which will be the majority of the listeners as well, I think. Realistically, it would probably make more sense to make it a Game of Thrones episode than a Twin Peaks episode, but Twin Peaks.
But it's us, though.
Yeah, it's us, and Twin Peaks is fucking Twin Peaks, so.
Yeah.
We're talking Twin Peaks. That's how it is. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage. Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker!